Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Well, welcome back to the Center for Internet Security's podcast series, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm your host for this episode, Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist for the Center for Internet Security. And we're going to take on one of our favorite topics here at CIS, a little wrap-up of the very recent multi-state ISAC meeting, the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center. And it's really one of the premier events in the CIS calendar. It's also one of the most fun, interesting, and I think useful things that we do. So we're joined by three amazing guests here to give us a little bit of insight, talk to us about the purpose, how's it going, a little behind the scenes look at how these events get carried off. First up, if you could introduce yourselves, welcome to Carlos Kazee. Carlos?
Hey, Tony, thank you. And to all who are listening, thank you for being here as well. My name is Carlos Kazee. I'm the Senior Vice President for the Multi-State ISAC Strategy and Plans area. And I'm glad to be here, Tony.
Oh, pleasure to have you, Carlos. Carlos is one of the few people I know that's been involved in multiple ISACs, and we'll ask him about that in a bit later. Next up is Karen Cerati. Karen, welcome to our show, and welcome to the audience.
Thanks, Tony, and thanks for having me. So my name is Karen Cerati. I am the Vice President of the MS ISAC Strategy and Plans. I work with Carlos. We support our executive committee team and work with some of the key sectors of our membership to make sure that the MS ISAC continues to provide value.
Wonderful. Thanks. And third, but certainly not least, welcome Greta Topol. Greta, please introduce yourselves.
Hi, Tony. Thanks so much for having me. Really happy to be here. And thanks for all the listeners. My name is Greta Noble, and I am the Director of Community Engagement. And I have the honor to interface with the membership, the MSISAC membership, every day.
Wonderful. And it is quite a lively community that I've known for many years. Anyway, so welcome to the three of you. And so our purpose today, we'll give a little insight to the audience about the topics I mentioned. And again, I think it's all fresh in our minds, right? We've survived another year, an exciting year, bigger and better than ever. You know, for the audience, Carlos, could you share a little bit of background on the Information Sharing and Analysis Centers, kind of in general, and then about the role of the multi-state ISAC?
So information sharing and analysis centers are member-owned, member-operated, member-maintained or maintained for member interest organizations. They're focused on security and resilience for segments or sectors of industry or infrastructure. So for us, the multi-state ISAC is an organization focused on public sector, state, local, tribal, and territorial. The elections infrastructure ISAC, also under Center for Internet Security purview, is focused on elections infrastructure, both government as well as key providers of services to elections infrastructure.
Yeah, there's a long track record and history behind all that, and we won't go through it for the audience here. But what has really been striking to me, so I retired from federal government in 2012, but sort of seeing this community building, right, providing space for people to share ideas. And I think it recognizes, we have lots of bumper stickers in this business, right? One team, one mission was the NSA one, but this sort of, we're all in this together and, public-private partnership, et cetera, et cetera. But, when you really get down to operationalizing that, right, to machinery, to physical, how are we going to do, it's been harder to find examples. And I think the multi-state ISAC, again, I got to be an observer from maybe the mid-2000s on, to see it in action has been really one of the highlight activities along these lines. And, Karen, let me ask you something. So one of the things that I think your team has trained me to say is when the ISAC gathers physically, it's not a conference, it's a meeting. And can you tell me the meaning behind that? Because it really, as I got involved, it really resonates with me. It's more than a slogan, but it really is a way of being.
Absolutely. The idea is that, as Carlos said, this organization is run by our members. It's for our members, right? So this this meeting is not a conference. It's not a place where they get talked to. It's a place where they can share with one another. And there's nothing more valuable than hearing from somebody else that's in your role somewhere else across the nation about some of the challenges they've had that resonate with you and the ways that they've fixed it. The member-to-member sharing that goes on at this meeting is just so much more valuable than any conference I've been to. And I was a former MSISAC member before I came over here to CIS to work for the company. So I've been going to these conferences since probably 2007, and they just get better and better every year. And we really do try to focus on it being a member meeting. It's for the members. It's not for anybody else. It's not for the sponsors. It's not for us at CIS. It's for the members.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that really strikes me about that, Karen, and one of the things I say when I talk about cybersecurity business, right, is that in cyberspace, we all have more in common than we do that's different. But we often don't act like it. We leave every enterprise to kind of figure it out on their own. And I look at the ISAC work as one of the grand experiments and successful ones in what we might call collaborative defense, right? So there is a physical gathering, the meeting that we're talking about here, but it's really, I think of it more of as a year-round collaborative conversation that happens to have a physical meeting once a year. I think that's a fair way. And as I got to know the participants, like that first time in 2009, I was just struck by the energy. You know, these are folks that spend their entire year, for example, dealing with complicated problems with no budget, or trying to convince bosses that they're not paying enough attention to the strategic challenges here. And then they find all their, you know, similarly situated friends in one spot. And there's nothing quite like that in terms of energy and I think excitement and opportunity, as you said, to learn. Greta, how about the meeting itself? Right. The numbers, I think I heard this is the largest one so far. Is that true?
That is true. That is true. Almost 1,000 attendees. We had over 1,000 registrants, but about, I think it was 965. I'm quoting myself. I hope that's correct. And it was great to have that many people in the room. And, you know, just what you and Karen were just discussing to me is a lot about when a member joins the MSISAC or the EIISAC, we really are welcoming them to the community. And I think that's the biggest thing that happens at this ISAC meeting, is that this is where you really get to experience the community in person and connect and establish relationships that are really beneficial to, you know, personal and professional lives moving forward. So I think that's just such an important part of what the outcome of this meeting really is.
Yeah, and that sort of, I'll call it the soft part of the business, right? You know, most of our industry is about technology and tools and the content of threat feeds and, you know, all these kind of complex abstract ideas. And, you know, one of the sort of beautiful things about the ISAC and the meeting, right, is to get to the heart of, like, what do we actually do? How do we make sense of all this? And, you know, part of our brand, if you don't mind saying that at CIS, is, you know, we try to cut through all that clutter, right? No one can track it all. I mean, many of us do this for a living, and we can't keep track of all the complexity and all the information. And so you need ways, trusted ways, to sort through that. And so again, this model of everyone's on their own, everyone should go read missed documents and buy tools and try to deal with this problem is really not a winner in national strategy. I think it really is about thinking about this. We're all in this together. I mean, this is not a bumper sticker thing. This is a literal thing, right? We're all connected using similar technology on the same network and so forth. So, but Carlos, yeah, so what about the human dimension here for you from your perspective?
Tony, I really like what you're saying there, and it resonates with me hearing Greta describe it. We had, you know, she mentioned 965 attendees. If you break that down and unpack that, some of those were state-affiliated attendees. Many of them, most, I think the largest segment, were local municipal government and agency attendees, tribal attendees, and even territories, you know, U.S. territories, all managing cyber infrastructure, IT infrastructure, and so on. But if we're not careful, we might forget that, to our peril, that they are leveraging different tools and capabilities. They have to figure out how best to implement them. They have to figure out best practices and how to justify acquiring them and how to maintain them and so on, how best to deal with different diverse regulatory environments and so on. So we can put on, you know, sessions and training and events, but one of the greatest educators in this environment is my peer who has done it before and I can learn from her or I can learn from him, and giving them an opportunity to come together and to identify their common interest and how they're doing what they're doing. It's just awesome to watch that.
Yeah, that idea that we do have this more in common than different. So let's act like it. Right? That is really a guiding principle really for the Center for Internet Security. But, you know, that aspect to it, right? Seeing someone who's like me, who's struggling with this. There's an old term I use, Carlos, you're old enough to have read the book Future Shock back in the day, right? And I think I got it from there. High tech, high touch was a term that was in that book. And I think I use it differently than the Toffler did in that book. But and here's my observation. The more high tech the world becomes, the more high touch really matters because we're just overwhelmed by technology. And so we don't trust through technology. We trust through humans, right? We trust through sort of that transaction, that understanding. Oh, you're like me. You struggled with this. You've made some mistakes. Is there anything I can learn? Here's what I know. And how am I going to sort through all this stuff? I need to find someone who understands my pain, who struggles with the same issues and so forth. What do you think, Karen?
Yeah, and one of the benefits of that as well, besides hearing those solutions from your peers, is it's a real life case study that will resonate with the people that you're trying to get funding from or trying to get approval from to implement something, right? It's not just theoretical. I can point to this state next to me or this county next to me that has done this, that has had success. So those stories that we hear from our members, member to member, peer sharing is extremely valuable.
Yeah. So having that confidence to take action, right, based upon the work of others. Yep. Carlos?
One of the real value propositions for the annual meeting, Greta oversees our leadership and mentoring, leadership management program, our mentoring environment. And at the ISAC annual meeting, yeah, she created an opportunity for mentors and mentees to come together. Again, you know, other value. I don't know if there's any thoughts you have, Brett, on that and seeing them come together in person.
Yeah, so this year was, with so many people there, it was actually a little bit difficult to get everybody to meet in one space. I don't know if you remember the networking events that, you know, the event put on, but they were packed. So there was a little shuffling and, you know, kind of looking around and who do you recognize and trying to grab them all in the circle. But especially for the leadership mentoring program, it's great when you can actually have that mentor and mentee meet in person. Or now we also have group mentoring. So it's great to get the participants that are working with a facilitator to actually just get in a group together and be able to talk. So we saw a couple of those instances happen at the networking hours. And, you know, it sparked in my brain that next year, I want to find a better way to get them to interact and be able to have those conversations that are really beneficial in person and really deepening and strengthening the relationships that they're building.
Yeah, and that really takes us, I use that quip of a year-round collaboration on defense with an event, right? And this was the impression I had when I first started to deal with smaller government. You know, I came from big federal government. We got hundreds of people in this group, you know, doing, and in many of these states, it's a very small number of people. There's not a lot of kind of support system, people to learn from, you know, not a lot of diversity of experience that you can tap into. And by doing that collaboratively, you can really enrich the pool of understanding, the way to help people out. And I think that was another thing that struck me. There was this, it's not a meeting. It's not only an event. It's all these other things and the ability to learn year round from each other, the working groups that were set up and sort of all these structural things that really helped people take advantage of the experience of others, I think are just an astounding resource. Carlos?
Yeah. Tony, one thing that was really awesome and a lesson we learned from last year, you know, around these events, we're always asking our members what resonated with you, what would you like to see next, that type of thing. And last year, as we were asking that question, quite a few people came back to us during one of our monthly webinars following the last year's annual meeting and said, I didn't get to go to the annual meeting, or I did go to the annual meeting. But this topic, I'd love to unpack that a little bit more. And so we actually started an event, a January event, where we will reprise some of the leading topics that were brought out in the annual meeting in sort of a virtual, you know, event session environment. We're thinking of doing that again this year. based on the feedback we've heard from our members. And also, you know, our training and education department, you know, we probably do somewhere in the neighborhood of 14 or 15 webinars a month on various topics. And these topics all come from our members and what our members are interested in. So you're absolutely right. You know, 73 sessions at this annual meeting, but many of the topics in those sessions will be continued in discussions and in dialogue in different webinar sessions, training sessions, and activities throughout the year.
Yeah, that's an incredible resource, I think. Again, every person I've met in a local government, county level government, et cetera, is underfunded, right? Under-resourced. And so the making that kind of information available, you know, bringing in expertise, addressing common problems makes a ton of sense. Karen, let me shift gears a little bit here and talk about the role of the CIS as a company and its support to this. Because I think this is one of the things that really distinguishes the work at the Center for Net Security. So, yeah, we have this community building, you know, we're responsible for 17,000 or so member organizations, state, local, tribal, territorial government. But the rest of the company is a professional advice-giving security analysis best practice organization. And I've noted several people who are like, yeah, I'm mentoring someone in the state government now. You know, there was part of the program that Greta talked about. But I mean, that feels, this is not a commercial for CIS, but it feels like such an extraordinary, unique opportunity, right? This sort of depth of analysis, the community reach that we have for best practices, and making that information available to state and local governments. Can you talk a little bit about the interaction there between the ISAC role and our broader role?
Yeah, so that being part of CIS is, I think, extremely valuable for the ISAC because you have that cadre of subject matter experts and materials and work that has gone into exploring the cybersecurity problem, and you're able to bring that to the state, local, tribal territory where they might not get that, right? So things like the, you know, CIS best practices, the benchmarks, I mean, those are hugely valuable to a state, local, tribal, territory entity that just, you know, doesn't have the resources to figure that out on their own. And part of the support that CIS provides to this annual meeting is that we bring in some of those experts from the CIS side, and we talk about those kinds of resources that are available to them. You know, the thought leadership that goes into different things like the reasonable cost of cybersecurity and, you know, things like that. It's just such a wealth of information and a wealth of, I think you mentioned it before, like cutting through all of the stuff that's out there. It's overload, right? So helping you understand what's important and helping you address things that you normally wouldn't have resources to do.
Yeah, that's right. It is overwhelming. If you remember, I've gotten more feedback on the one talk I've given in my career, Lifting the Fog of More, from, I think it was 2014 or something like that at RSA, and my conclusion there was at a national kind of strategic level, our problem is not the lack of resources to deal with cybersecurity. It's the surplus of them. We're overwhelmed by marketing fog and confusion and conflicting claims and overlapping regulatory demands and all that kind of stuff. And so the conclusion of that talk was the only way you can get out of this is this kind of community behavior, right? We have to band together and recognize none of us can sort all that out on our own. Bad news. But the good news is we don't actually have to, because we're all kind of facing the same situation, right? There's a pile of bad things happening. We all have to deal with it, whether we can afford to figure that out by hiring threat analysts and all that stuff on our own. So why don't we just do that together? And that's a really, you know, that was the big idea that founded the Center for Net Security in 2000. Right? Not every enterprise is going to, in fact, most of our economy cannot do this on their own. They absolutely have to find ways to learn from each other. So I think we get to embody that here at CIS. So end of commercial for the Center for Net Security, but it's just an extraordinarily important and big idea and sort of counter to the marketplace. We talk about this a lot, right? If you're competing in the marketplace, sort of like, you know, more features is better, right? More tools, more stuff is better. But for most of our users, more is just more confusion, more uncertainty. And so who can I trust? How do I get together with those folks that you mentioned, right? Who's done this? Who's suffered through this? Who's experimented and failed? Who's experimented and has succeeded? And what can I learn from them? Greta, any other sort of those personal interaction stories or the learnings that you've been experiencing through this?
Yeah, well, I kind of just wanted to add on to something, you know, the two of you were just, or, you know, we've been talking about is CIS obviously brings, you know, such a value to this meeting. But it's a two-way road because we end up hearing a lot from the membership that then kind of recrafts how something, you know, how CIS does something, whether it's talking about how to implement something as opposed to saying, hey, here's this great tool, here's this great service. We've heard back from the membership, well, tell us how to do it and, you know, hold our hands and walk us through it. And so what I love about the meeting too, is that two-way street. It's, we're getting feedback from the membership that improves everything we're doing at CIS and the ISACs. And we're also, you know, as CIS team members, we also know that we're bringing value to the membership, you know, because they're giving us that feedback. So it's a really great two-way street. I just wanted to make.
It's incredibly important point. And wonderful that you brought. Yeah, that is. And the thought leadership that Karen talked about, right? It's you know, that's one of the things we've really come to appreciate on the leadership team. It's not a broadcast activity, you know, that is by leading, you learn, right? We bring what we are best shot. But, you know, like I mentioned, the folks who are developing best practices and those benchmarks and all that kind of stuff, they're so, number one, they're so thrilled to be dealing directly with people that will benefit, right? That are underserved by the marketplace or overwhelmed by all this. But they also learn, like, well, wait a minute, we write this in a language that's too complex for them. Or, right, they're not going to do it themselves, they're going to outsource it. So what do I have to produce that will help them with that? Or how do I help them align their technical policies with the technical tooling with the view of their management? And that's kind of what you hear, right? The activity, as you so importantly point out, it shapes our product and services strategy. And so this is a really exciting opportunity for everybody that we can sort of bring all this together into one place. Carlos, let me come back to you on this sort of the machinery behind, not the event itself, but sort of the executive committee and the ISAC. Right? Again, this is not one singular event. This is how this operates year round. Talk to the audience a little bit about kind of that sort of the machinery of the ISAC and the ongoing activity.
Well, it's interesting to note that to put on an annual meeting like this and to try to hit the quality that our members deserve, the planning and preparation for our next ISAC annual meeting started probably about 4 or 5 months ago. You know, it's about an 18-month planning cycle. And just like Greta said, that's 18 months of listening to our members, what matters most to them. What do we need to put in front of them in terms of an agenda? What do we need to build into the event that supports their interests? And we are really, really blessed in both the Elections Infrastructure ISAC and the Multi-State ISAC to have executive committees. I kind of think of the MS-ISAC Executive Committee as more or less the de facto board of directors for the ISAC membership. Because there are 16 members that are representative of all of the state, local, tribal, territorial, and infrastructure interests. Each of their individual roles is to not just consider their jurisdiction, but to consider all of the jurisdictions and what we can do collectively to best support them. So a lot of the intelligence and information that we have that helps us to make sure that we scratch the right itch comes from our executive committee and their interactions with their peers at the ISAC annual meeting last year fed into our planning and preparation for the annual meeting this year, and we'll continue that process going forward. So it's a very, very big event, and I would be remiss if I didn't also mention that we do have positive interaction and input from sponsors and some federal government attendees who in many cases are involved as presenters and speakers, but who are also doing networking and engaging with our members as well.
Yeah, that role of the executive committee, you know, as I've known a number of them and interacted with them, and this is not ceremonial duty. They are active, right? They really feel the responsibility to the larger community you talked about, and they put the kind of energy and time into it. And so there's some legendary names in there, of good folks. That's what always struck me. Again, I spent my life growing up in big federal government, but, you know, the energy at state and locals, right? You're there because you want to be there. I mean, by and large, they are fired up. They know that they're, emptying the stables with a teaspoon. They are really committed to what they do. And I think that's something that really impressed me. I remember the quick anecdote in 2009 when I came out to speak. I remember having lunch at a table and it was the director of a CERT, emergency response team for a mid-sized state. I won't name them, but, and we got to talk about training. I said, well, what is your training budget for a year? And she gave me a number and it was like astoundingly low. I'm not sure you could buy a SANS course for that. I said, wow, how do you keep people in that environment? And she goes, well, we can't do it based upon that, right? Formal, fancy high-end training. So we basically hire people with potential and do a lot of OJT. And some percent will stay because they like the service element of what they're doing, right? And some will go on, but that's just the way we have to operate. We have to do the best, to pull together the team that we have. And that really inspired me when I came back to my big NSA team with, frankly, lots of money and lots of complaining that they didn't have more. And it was like, what can we do to spin off value to folks that don't operate kind of at the Department of Army level or, DOD level? Because those are giant scale things that are important too, but they're just, we tend to think of that as we'll solve that through money. And that's not at all true in this community. You're going to have to do it through energy and committed people and all that. So, yeah, I think that is, for the audience, this sounds like a giant kumbaya fest, but it really is, again, a real commitment to do these things and to participate in this larger community, to give and to get as we go through all that. Just a couple other thoughts here as we go through this. So this has really matured. And Carlos, you mentioned the role of sponsors. What I heard from some of my company friends that wound up there, they were like, I can't believe this. This is an amazing event. Everybody that's here is someone we want to speak to. And so I think a few sponsors have figured that out. So can you talk a little bit, or any of you, about the sort of role of sponsors, right? Because what's really precious to us is the trust that we have created with this community and the independence. And yet recognizing we are independent of the market, but we're all dependent upon it. And so how do we collaborate and how do we do that and do so responsibly? Carlos, if you could kick us off on that, appreciate it.
Sure, Tony, up front. For many organizations and associations, events like this are money-making events. And the sponsorships, this is where a lot of their revenue comes from. What's I'm really proud to say about the MSISAC is there are no member dues for any state, local, tribal, or territorial entity. So when we put on an event like this, their cost is just coming. There's no conference costs or attendance costs or anything else like that. And so having sponsors allows us to put on a class act event for our members. But there's a huge counterbalance that we hear from our executive committee and from our members. And that counterbalance is be very judicious about who you bring as a sponsor to the event and also about what their role and footprint is. Because, again, as Karen outlined at the start of our podcast, this is a members meeting. So we want to make sure that if there's a sponsor there, it is a sponsor that members want to talk to and that the sponsor is in a role and position where the members aren't sort of obligated if they choose not to. So drawing that balance is really, really important. But year over year, based on our being sensitive to our members' interests and requirements, I think we hit that really, really well. We could flood the place with more sponsors, and then we, CIS, would have a lower price tag for these events because we sort of subsidize whatever's not covered by anything else. But I love the commitment of our CEO, and I love the strong voice of our executive committee that says keep this a members meeting and don't turn it into a trade show.
No, I think it's very well said, Carlos. Yeah, I remember someone once said, well, you guys seem to be like vendor agnostic. I said, well, no, it's not that we don't care. We care a lot, but we are independent of, right? But we recognize we're not going to solve this without vendor partners. But we want to be, clear of the role that we play as a trusted go-between here, between the users of technologies, the buyers, and the sellers or vendors of technology. And it's important, right? We want to help people cut through that clutter and the fog and make sense of it all. So I think, you know, so look back on this event. Again, I've been around it for a few years and had the chance to speak a couple of times on the stage there. And I've really come to appreciate this community as a really tight and coherent and excited group who really want to share. It's not a trade show. It's not a, you know, it's not a broadcast. Let's teach you and you guys sit back and absorb kind of a thing. It's really much more, I think, lively and interactive than that. So where are we going with all this? Greta, how about you start us off? What do you think's next for the ISAC meeting? Because I know we're already well underway for the for the next version of this.
Absolutely. I expect to see even more people there next year, which is great. And also, you know, we're always thinking of what can we do better? So we take the surveys that we do at the ISAC annual meeting very seriously. We comb through every single comment and really try to analyze what's the next thing that's going to bring more value to the members at these types of meetings. So we're looking at a couple things. We're looking at developing more roundtable discussion style sessions. So a little bit less, you know, presenting to and really allowing the members to take a topic and sit with other members so that they can work through it themselves. We really are hoping that that's where best practices and relationships and that feeling of community are going to really grow. And we're always looking at more networking events, just, you know, the general networking events. And, you know, do you put some different communities together? You know, do you try to get all the cities together or maybe all of the power and utility memberships together so that they can just talk and engage with themselves? So we're really looking at expanding those ideas today and are moving forward and really making sure that we're still bringing that valuable content that they expect as well. So I'm excited. I can't wait for next year already. I'm ready to put in the work.
Wonderful. I'm right with you. I can't wait to see what you come up with. So very, very excited for that. All right. So let's kind of wrap this up for the audience here. And I really appreciate the look back at this year's multi-state ISAC meeting. And again, I was there and enjoyed the energy and being a part of it. Appreciate the role that y'all have given me there. Any last thought that each of you would care to leave for the audience here? I'll give you a lightning round chance to either emphasize or bring something up that I didn't get to. Karen, if I could start with you.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'd leave is if you haven't had an opportunity to attend, please come. You won't regret it. You're going to meet so many people who can help you in your role, and you're going to be able to take back so many new ideas and different approaches that's going to help you in your job. And you're going to make relationships that are going to last a long time. And you'll realize you're not in this alone, right? You have a really strong and supportive community within the ISAC that's behind you and that's there to help.
Exciting. Well said. Greta, how about you?
I mean, I think Karen nailed it there, but it's funny. You know, I was just going to expand a little bit on the idea of loneliness. We talk about that a lot in our leadership mentoring program and the feeling that, you know, IT and cyber leaders do feel alone sometimes. And, you know, what I would say to anybody listening to this call or listening to this podcast is, you're not. This is a place where you want to be. This is where you can find your friends and your peers and maybe your next mentor, maybe somebody that you can grow. And so it's really exciting to be a part of that.
That's exactly right. I think it is a unique opportunity for, as I said before, the sort of high tech, right? We get overwhelmed. We sort of spend so much of our time thinking about technology, but at the end, it's, you know, human interaction, human trust, human, you know, communication just gets a lot of things done. I often joke in my government career, you know, I've been associated with some big things, that nothing lasting I ever did was the product of like the gigantic 5-year study formal paper. It came down to a handful of people agreeing to do something, right? Deciding that something had to get done. And that happened because of proximity.
We did have I have to give a shout out. We had an excellent presentation on that by our very own Aaron Perkins, who works in marketing communication, just talking about how important the human side of cybersecurity is and how important it is to make those real connections and the progress that you will see when we start doing that kind of connections and that collective defense, as you've referred to.
Right. So our learning that we offer at this ISAC is full spectrum, right? Addressing those kinds of issues, our workforce issues, our, you know, what we bring as human beings to this. I think that's wonderfully wonderful reminder, Karen. Appreciate it. And Carlos, if you could wrap up kind of.
Absolutely. You know, I think we've covered a lot of really important points here. Think about this. Our ISAC environment is unique. Public sector, state, local, tribal, territorial, and all of the different infrastructure elements within that. We currently have over 17,000 members. So I want to encourage everyone listening to this, if you haven't been or if you have been, to save the date, June 22nd through 25th, Scottsdale, Arizona is where we're going to be next year. It's going to be a little bit hot in Scottsdale, but we're going to have a great time. Save the date, and not just save the date and plan to attend, but also reach out and connect with others and plan to attend together. Plan to, you know, meet up there so that we can do some structured networking in line with what Greta is talking about to pull people together. And let's do some coordination in advance around that to really, really make this the best. This will be the 18th of our annual meetings in the course of our 20-year history. So let's make 18 the best one of all.
All right. That's a great sales pitch for a no-cost conference there, Carlos. I really appreciate the, a no-cost meeting. But it's, yeah, as Greta has emphasized, this is based upon the challenges that are brought to us by the membership, right? This is not, not for the purpose. There's lots of great conferences and events out there in this industry, but this one is really unique for those reasons. It's focused. It's the participants. It's if you're a potential sponsor, you know, this is a target-rich environment. This is a really, and the conversation is equally rich. So with that, we're going to wrap up this episode. Really appreciate, thank you all for the time and attention that you've brought to this and for the great work that goes into this. You know, these events, if you could get a sense of the machinery under the hood, any of you who've ever put on a substantial event know how much work goes into the planning and the logistics, the movement of stuff, the movement of people, the arranging of speakers. It's just an extraordinary activity at the Center for Internet Security and one that we're really proud to host for this community. So with that, we'll wrap up to the audience. Thank you for your time. We know there's lots of competition for your time and attention. We appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to us in the usual ways, and we will catch you at the next episode of Cybersecurity Where You Are.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.